what do you make of the line, we've shit too many times in the same pot to piss on our own feet? What does that proverb mean?
I think the idea is we have been so careful about one thing that, like, you know, we've been so careful about consolidating our waste that we should be able to piss without hitting our shoes.
Welcome to Bald New Prestige, the officially unofficial podcast for Shogun on FX Hulu. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And we're back for episode 2 of the mini-series. Aaron, kind of talked about what we thought in general of the show in the first episode, so I don't know that we need to rehash that too much, but what do you think specifically about this episode?
As much as I liked the first episode, I kind of like this one even more. Nice. There's not as, like, the first episode is a poo-poo platter of sex and violence and intrigue and comedy and beauty and Age of Sail, wooden sailing ships, and I was just delighted. This was a lot more absorbing. Like, you really start getting into the ins and outs of the strategy, and you start to see a little bit of the second hearts of people, and come to appreciation of, like, what Torunaga is trying to do and what is, like, I also started to get a little respect for Ishidu, the chief lord that's his chief rival, and I started seeing, like, this is like a godfather situation where Torunaga is the godfather, and Ishidu is like Barzini, you know. Sure. Like, he's very smart, but he's not quite as smart as the godfather, but he knows that, so he's like paying very close attention to what, you know, Don Corleone's doing and trying to match him step for step, but he just can't quite do it. Or he's limited by his stupid allies. Like, you know, Barzini had Tattaglia, who's a fucking idiot. So it's like, I just kept on seeing, like, and I'm like, yes, this is the shit that I really like.
Yeah.
And it continued to be amazingly well acted and beautiful to look at and sounds great. So it's like, yes, I like this episode even more than the first one. How about you?
Nice. You say absorbing, I say confusing. That's not entirely true. I found certain elements of it very confusing. Mm. And I still, after two watches, have questions about some of the motivations of people or some of the understanding why the moves they're making are important and smart in context of the Christian background and the Japanese background. It's a little bit confusing, but I also was appreciating 90% of it for how interesting the intrigue is. So I'm kind of torn on this episode, but really only for my own ignorance, not because I think there's anything wrong with the quality of it, if that makes sense. Because, it is beautiful. There are some shots here of the city and just like... the landscape that are amazing, and like you said, the acting, man, everybody is playing their part so well. From Blackthorn, who, you know, is growing in my estimation over the course of this episode somehow, to Yabushige, who continues to be a little he just seems like an ugh kind of guy, right? Like, you're just such a gross opportunist. You mm-hmm. will jump ship. You have no... He does not strike me as a man with honor, is the thing.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of what they're getting at with his character in this episode in particular. In the first episode, you're supposed to think, oh, you know, he's a very smart man who has kind of weighed all the pros and cons here and is going with the flow, right? Mm-hmm. This episode, he's making moves that are kind of gross, but I think we'll learn more about that in the future. So I don't know. I appreciate this episode, even though I'm a little bit confused by it.
I also really liked how they gave dimensionality to the foes. Like, I think this Father Martin.
Yeah.
Seems like he might be an ally. He's like in I appreciate him as a younger Father Domingo that we'll also meet this episode, that like he really believes in the cause and he's uncomfortable with the venal nature of some of the dealings of his superiors in this organization. So I like the fact, I mean, that's a hallmark of great dramatic television when they are humanizing and illuminating. You've got good guys and bad guys on both sides. You've got people without honor and honorable people of good intentions on both sides. I love it. Yeah, I love it.
All the facets. I'm with you. Why don't we get into the recap?
We'll be right back with more Bald Move after this brief pause. Here's what's new in premium content for our club members.
This Tuesday, we're back off the clock with a new premium podcast covering our experiences with the new Amazon series Fallout, Alex Garland's Civil War, as well as some thoughts on X-Men 97.
Then on Friday, The Old Reliable, Lunch with Jim and Aaron. Join us in the Munch crowd to watch us record live at 1 p.m. Eastern or check out the podcast later that day.
If you want more Bald Move in your life, head over to support.baldmove.com to find out how you can get tons of bonus audio and video content, plus ad-free feeds.
You've been listening to quite a few Bald Move podcasts now, but you're not in the club? Whoo boy, you are missing out.
Not only are all of our premium club podcast feeds completely ad-free, but we have lots of other great content exclusively for people in the club.
There's a weekly lunch with Jim and Aaron where we chat with fans about anything and everything from TV and films, food, fun, life advice, and more.
But there's also Off the Clock, our premium podcast where we talk about all the shows we don't have time for on our public feeds.
Plus, you get access to our full spoiler-filled first-run movie reviews of our newly released films.
Don't forget Instant Take and Talk podcast, where we give our hot takes and discuss television shows with our fans live and immediately after the episode airs.
With mega shows like House of the Dragon coming this summer, we're going to have lots to talk about.
Not to mention access to our fun and friendly community of club members, with exclusive Discord channels and a dedicated forum. It's one of the best places on the internet to hang out and chat about pop culture.
Bottom line, you're helping two regular type guys in the Midwest make the content you like to listen to, which some would say is rewarding to itself.
Help keep the lights on and the bits flowing at Bald Move.
And get some awesome content for yourself. Head to support.baldmove.com to join the club today. And now, back with more Bald Move.
Start off in Osaka 1 year ago. A little bit of a flashback here is that Taiko is dying, and he invites Toranaga to stay near his deathbed with him, and asks him if he'd be interested in being regent until their young heir comes of age. Toranaga does not think that's in the best interest either of himself or of the Taiko's son, and he's worried that a civil war is starting, so Taiko forms a council of regents, including Toranaga, and asks him to protect his son till he comes of age at 16.
So I want to make a series of statements that I think is true, and you tell me if you disagree with any of them.
Okay.
This Taiko had in the recent past, I don't know how recent, whether it's 10 years ago, 30 years ago, had attempted an invasion of China through the Korean Peninsula and was repulsed.
Seems like it.
That is what I think is the proximal cause of all the unrest. Like, if they had conquered Korea and then China, they would be ruling as like supreme lords of multiple continents. And because they got defeated, that this is made the other lord, like there's no longer enough territory and riches to divide up against these very ambitious lords, and it's caused a political problem. Now, especially now that the old man's dying.
I agree with that.
What don't you agree with it? Because like because the Taiko says, I wish I had taken Korea, implying that he would be ruling Korea and perhaps all of China, and he would
and
just
he
given
Japan to Toranaga.
That
I agree with. It's something about something it said later about the Portuguese, the Catholics coming in and meddling and causing an incursion. Or maybe that wasn't the word they used. Essentially causing a civil war that I think is... So this is part of my confusion. I think what they're saying is the Catholics came in, started a civil war that distracted this Taiko from his goal of taking Korea. So it wasn't
or in secret aided the Koreans to keep the Japanese
perhaps,
on. Because like I think the other thing I understood is the Spain and Portugal want to be the sole point of contact for all these people. They want to monopolize the trade in China. They want to monopolize the trade in Japan. They want to monopolize the trade in Korea. All these different
kingdoms.
And
ultimately turn them into their
vassals.
Holdings. Yeah.
And if Japan had united all of like the broader Asia under that, and when they automatically will not have the same amount of power as bargaining with all these guys divided. So that's the other statement is I think this is my understanding is Spain and Portugal use this hidden fortress of Japanese Ronin and all these guns and troops to turn the tide of certain battles and foment and also to have a popular Christian uprising to undercut this lord so we couldn't take Korea and China.
Yes, I agree with that.
Okay.
For sure.
All right. All right. So that's why I said, again, I don't know this for a fact, but I also know that, like, you know, before the Europeans came and started meddling, that, like, there was, like, these pushes on both from China and Japan to consolidate power, to be the regional empire. And I think that all went down around this era. So, yeah.
Really, so that's the one thing I do know is the history of Japan and China is sordid. They both hate each other. Well, hated it certainly. Still, there's a lot of lingering hate.
I think it's like the French and English,
committed
except
on
for
both
things
sides.
Except for things that happened hundreds of years ago. It's things that happened like 80, you know, like to your grandparents.
Sure, sure. So
yeah,
I get it. What do you make of the line, we've shit too many times in the same pot to piss on our own feet? What does that proverb mean?
I think the idea is we have been so careful about one thing that, like, you know, we've been so careful about consolidating our waste that we should be able to piss without hitting our shoes.
Yeah. Or this is old hat to us. Can we really not?
Yeah, like we've dealt with
another
a
far, way. Yeah.
Like if you're dealt with the shit, like if you have to deal, if someone's saying, hey, I need a group of volunteers, someone deals with shit, someone deals with piss. I'm stepping forward to deal with the piss.
Oh yeah,
okay,
sign me up.
Because it's the easiest thing to deal with. You know, you can mop that shit up. No, you can mop that piss up. It's not going to get everywhere. It's much easier. It's a liquid. It's not a solid. So he's saying we've already dealt with the piss.
Yeah.
Or we've already dealt with the shit. How can we not be dealing with the piss? How can we be struggling with the piss? I think.
Yeah, I think you're right. They've already dealt with like a war in Korea. They've been through the grinder, right?
But the
now
other thing,
their own stuff is tearing them apart.
As they're establishing different war buddies, like the Taiko and Torinaga were war buddies. You'll find out that Ishidu was a war buddy to Yobashiga. You know, the young war guy pulled out from a pile of dead Koreans. And so there's just like this old like alliances that are shifted, you know, like Yobashiga, like if he was Ishidu's war buddy, why the hell did he join with Torinaga? That's still a big open question I have after this episode. But that deals with duality, the servants of two masters, you know.
They directly raise that question and do not give us an answer. So,
yeah.
It'll be interesting to find out. And the one lesson that he wants his son to learn is that the man who stands at the greatest height is the loneliest man in the realm. It's, I guess, a concern for people who don't like to be lonely. Mm-hmm. I think what he's saying is there are enemies all around, and it's a paranoid life, right?
Yeah, I think that seems to be universal truth, that the more power you have, it's isolating. Because if nothing else, how can someone relate?
Mm-hmm.
It's not relatable to be the person who rules an entire nation.
Yeah, especially this nation. I mean, they make a point of saying, look at Osaka, look at its grandeur. What do you think the person who rules this place must be like?
Yeah.
How do you think they rule?
What kind of man would it take to rule this place? It's intimidating.
Let's go over to Rodriguez, one of my favorite characters, who's showing.
Can we talk about the intro? What did you have? It's very
Is this the first episode with the intro?
Yes, the first one.
Okay,
didn't have
I
one.
Thought so. I like the part I like the most is the sailing over this Japanese garden, like sand art kind of thing. I thought that stuff was really evocative.
Yeah, it's got this very foundation-y If you've seen Apple TV's Foundation series, it does something similar with these like shifting sands. It's like living sands. Mm-hmm.
But this, it's that Shukame kind of thing that they were talking about in the first episode, right? They're literally like sailing the sea. They're navigating the rough waters, but it's the Japanese art garden. And that kind of gives me the vibe of going with the flow of nature, right? These tides are going to take you the direction they're going to take you, and you need to do your best to navigate it.
Yeah, and there's like this kind of like also this mandala thing, this sand art practice of...
Is that what it's called? Yeah, okay.
I think so, but it's also, I'm not sure if it's like, that's Buddhist. There might be a different term for the Shinto traditions. And I know both kind of have their place in Japan. I did think it was a little missed opportunity. When I first started going up, I'm like, oh, this is going to be like very Game of Thrones, where you're going to see Japan and like Toranaga's here and Osako's here and Ishido's here. I kind of could have used that. I think that would have been a cool way to like ground myself in where everything's happening.
Yeah, we'll see if it matters. Like, so far, everything is happening in Osaka. There's no other location.
There's no way it was so important in Game of Thrones to understand where things were happening relative to its world. I can always look at a map, but
sure.
Anyway, it's one of those things where instead of studying it every episode, I think it's probably going to be more of like, oh, that's kind of neat, and then never watch it again.
Right. So Rodriguez shows the priest the pirating records he found on Blackthorn's ship. One of the priests wants to show the records to the Japanese, but the other, Martin, points out that the Toranaga might want a complete translation of it, which is a problem because it contains some entanglements in Macau that they don't want the Japanese to know about. So yeah. Rodriguez suggests they kill Blackthorn, and one of them is about to be the interpreter for him. So it's not, he'll see to it. It's not a problem.
Yeah. And I like that this other entanglement is Toranaga turns out, and you know, part of his five-way sharing of power, he is like the minister of foreign affairs, essentially. So like all of this stuff is squarely under his parlay and will be until the lords execute him. So he has ultimate power to hold their ships, to get a complete translation of this log. He's in a unique position to threaten them.
Yeah.
And he's a desperate man. He's a desperate man at this point. His back is to the wall.
Speaking of missed opportunities, I was absolutely salivating at the possibilities here when we see in the previous episode that Toranaga has personally invited Mariko to be his translator. And then he's also invited this priest to be the translator.
Yes.
That to me was incredibly interesting. And I think there's a missed opportunity here for them to have a secret interpreter, for them to have someone there verifying that the priest doesn't know is verifying the words.
Three-part.
I thought Mariko was going to be sitting outside the paper wall listening in, right? Like in another room over, because there's no way you cannot hear these people discussing things from the next room over. That would have been, I think, even more interesting, like him having the information that he can verify secretly whether this guy is telling him the truth.
You're right. There it is. I wonder why, if that was an intentional or it just he didn't think to be that sneaky, because you're right. That's a strictly better, because I my impression of this father is that he wouldn't have outright committed falsehoods, but he might have put as much spin on something.
Sure.
But like when Mariko's there, he instantly I was kind of curious to see what he was going to do, too.
Yeah.
And with Mariko there, like especially you find out that he was her teacher, he knows how good she is at speaking Portuguese. It's just not possible to do something like that. So it's like,
right?
Yeah,
and
I was
at the
really
very least,
to know.
Like it would have been a loyalty test to see if this guy's going to be loyal, or even like worst case scenario for this guy, it would have been he can verify that, oh, he's not giving me the truth, and in fact, I know that, and he doesn't, and now I have that piece of information, so he doesn't know that I know he's not loyal.
But on the other hand, you also can tell a lot by how this guy was affected by Mariko's presence. Like, I think maybe that's another test of, like, you know, how much is he going to freak out or how flustered he's going to be. Yeah.
Yeah, we didn't, like, formally introduce this scene, but this is the interpreter arrives, speaks briefly with the heir before the meeting commences, and Mariko's there as a backup interpreter to verify his translations, essentially, although it's under the guise of her learning from him, which I did like. Blackthorne explains that England is at war with Portugal because Catholics are the enemies of Protestants. Torunaga asks him what he'd do if they were also enemies with Japan. And Blackthorne says, well, I'd make peace with my maker because I'm dead. And then Ishido shows up and carts Blackthorne off to prison.
You mentioned not knowing about the Jesuits. And I had known about the Jesuits from time to time. They've come up in fiction that I've enjoyed. And the reputation I have... So the Jesuits are one of the orders that is expressly created by the Pope. They are often called the Marines of God. Like, the idea is, like, they're the they are the most devoted. They are the first boots on the ground in terms of missionary work. They are modern days tend to be also at the forefront of, like, scientific and philosophical thought of the church. But they're personally loyal to, like, there's a I forget what the Latin phrase to describe how they're supposed to the idea is, like, almost like they're zombies. So, like, they're like dead corpses. They're only animated by the will of God and the Pope. They are supposed to have no personal desires. But I think they're put, and I think that they're showing that this Father Martin, oh God, it's Martinez all over again. old fans, Walking Dead fan, old school Walking Dead fans know what I'm talking about. Father Martin, I think, sees himself as a Marine of God, that he does see himself as this higher noble purpose, and that he is young enough to still have that passion, but also old enough to see how it's actually being applied in this new land and finds it distasteful. But maybe justifies it because of the barbarism. Like, you know, obviously he sees what the Englishmen doing here of, like, butchering their way through Catholic Manila, the Philippines, is also abhorrent. So maybe it's a lesser of two evils, but he's seems very uncomfortable with the position he's put in terms of his eternal life and soul and God and that kind of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And later, the position he's in is sort of a middleman for the business as well. With this black ship stuff, this Faria guy.
Yeah.
I love the dialogue in this scene. I think it really just sparkles. There's so much of the dialogue in the show is really good.
Especially the way
that stuff about, where he says, oh, my Lord, I couldn't possibly imagine myself being your enemy. And he says, I very easily I can.
Yeah. And how smooth he was.
Yeah, it's so good.
I also really like how the way, you know, because it'd be tedious to watch this be translated. Yep. And they just increase the tempo. They start off with the father interpreting, but, like, it gets, like, his responses get shorter and shorter, and they kind of, like, by the end of the scene, it's just Torunaga talking right to Blackthorne.
Yes.
And it's such a really cool technique. It lets that dialogue just crackle.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. We'll be right back with more Bald Move after this brief pause. Since the dawn of time, we've been putting clothes on our back that identify us with our people, our group, our tribe.
And while Bald Move might be one of the smallest, weirdest tribes out there, transcending all concepts of border, class, culture, and creed, we still have respect for the old ways.
At support.baldmove.com, you can get t-shirts, hats, mugs, and more. We have something for every one of our podcasts, or just wear the four pips of the Bald Move logo with pride.
Bald Move merch beats running around naked, and they make a great gift for the Bald Move fan in your life. Join our tribe! Head over to support.baldmove.com and click on merch to start shopping. Commission podcasts are an awesome feature here at Bald Move that allows you, the individual listener, to decide what we talk about for a single podcast.
The community loves it because it often leads to fun, fan-favorite films and TV shows that we've overlooked getting the coverage they deserve.
And we love it because we're constantly exposed to great stuff that's not even on our radar.
The way it works is simple. You go to support.baldmove.com and you click on commissions. Then you pay the flat rate for the commission and tell us what two-ish hours of content you'd like us to make podcasts on.
Then we'll contact you for details, advanced feedback, and any dedications you'd like to make.
Then we watch the thing, discuss the thing, turn it into a podcast, and pump it right into your ears.
We get consistently great feedback on how much our commissioners love their podcast, and they make great gifts for the dedicated Bald Move fan in your life.
And who knows, that dedicated fan could even be you. Treat yourself. Check out support.baldmove.com for more info. And now, back with more Bald Move. All right, Mariko tells her son what Blackthorn looked like.
We missed that Ishido, because this is a crucial thing. Ishido, the rival lord, walks in and is like surprised and kind of shames Torinaga for taking an interest in Blackthorn. Did you introduce this?
I said he shows up and carts Blackthorn off to prison, but we can talk about it.
Oh, okay. Because like I think this is another subtle strategy of like Torinaga is hoping that they take the bait. Like his only way out is if he can split the Christian lords from the non-Christian lords. And by, I think at this point he's almost feigning interest and like, hey, I kind of want these guns and cannons if things go bad, but also if I can kind of get like some, my spies tell me there's some kind of beef here. I don't understand it, but if I can, and he gets more than he's bargained for in terms of like Blackthorn being an ally, but I think he's just fucking around and like he's hoping Ishido would show up and he could be like, oh yeah, I was just playing along, satisfying my curiosity, but I'll send him to prison for execution, no problem, knowing that that's like setting the hook.
Oh yeah, totally. Yeah, he's springing the trap on him here. He's letting him spring the trap on himself, which I really love.
Yeah, and also like how these letters are marked, like, you know, that only makes sense when you acknowledge and you respect all the powers. Like when in Japan, like what?
Yeah.
Some king I never even heard of said it's okay for you to rape and pillage. Okay.
Right.
You know, and it's not even your king. It's another king that told you it's okay to do this. What? It seems like bullshit. And it kind of is, if we're being honest.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Mariko tells her son what Blackthorn looked like, and then she explains to her very stern husband that she was invited to translate for him. He's not happy about that, but then Hiramatsu shows up and takes Mariko to see Torinaga again.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because she is now the daughter-in-law to this very powerful lieutenant of Torinaga, but
yeah.
This husband is like, this seems like this husband is just a disappointment. Like, I don't even think his father, the Iron Hand, likes him because he just deals with him in total disrespect. You know, it's like Torinaga's called another meeting. Oh, yeah, not with you, you dumbass. Sit down. It's your wife he wants. Like, there's a more tactful way to deal with that. But then again, I guess in Japanese culture, the father doesn't really have to respect the son. It's a
sure.
It's a really kind of a one way street.
Mariko socializes a bit with Torinaga's court here before they get down to business. He asks her judgment on Blackthorn, and she thinks that they should be wary of him. Hiramatsu doesn't understand why he's wasting time with Blackthorn, and Torinaga says he's going to use him. Well, he doesn't say it. He lets Mariko figure it out. He says he's going to use him to divide the council since two of the regents are actually Christian. So far, so good. Although, the first time around, I was having difficulty wondering why Catholic regents wouldn't just have Blackthorn killed. But
they do.
Turns out that's exactly what they want, which is what is dividing the council.
This is the Barzini. Like, he doesn't know why Torinaga is fascinated with the barbarian, but he knows he's smart enough that he should want to know why before he lets the Christian lord kill. So it's like, it's...
Yeah, absolutely.
It's really, like, on second watch, it's really rewarding because you can see all this kind of unfold. And I really like this dinner party scene where, you know, it's the wife of his general, like, the Iron Hands, right? Who he's like teasing, and there's like, oh, you're so unmanageable. Torinaga's like, yeah, it's unmanageable like that ass of yours. Right. And the way the general, his face when he said that, like, yeah, you're not wrong. That ass is hard to handle. you know, I didn't expect that kind of, you know, I didn't expect that kind of comedy in my High Lord's table discussions.
Yeah, it's welcome though. I feel like this can get a little overbearing sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So those moments of levity are pretty nice. Somebody is we also find that Torunaga has spies among the Portuguese Catholics, which I think is interesting to note.
Seems like he's got spies everywhere. Yeah.
Well, everybody has spies. Like, I don't know if it's Ishido or if it's Torunaga himself who has spies over in Edo, or wherever that wherever the ship showed up.
Yeah, Yuba said that he must have spies in the village. He's very well connected, and all these pigeons going around very much remind me of the ravens in Game of Thrones, you know?
Absolutely.
These maesters and their rookeries tying little scripts of scrolls to bird feed. It's fun.
Somebody is taken out of Blackthorn's cell, and he spots a man of faith inside, and he strikes up a conversation, finds out that everybody in this prison here is marked for death, as is Torunaga.
Did you recognize Father Domingo?
Again, not until I looked him up, because he looked very familiar.
Yeah, he's been in a lot of stuff. The thing that I most recognize him from is, I think, Clear and Present Danger, that Tom Clancy film with Harrison Ford.
Okay.
But he plays a lot of
he's
like Latino, shady, bad guys. He's played a couple heroic figures.
He plays the main bad guy in Fast Five, right?
Yeah. All right.
The brother of Jason Momoa. Uh-huh.
Jason Momoa's dad, I think. Or is it his brother?
I think it's
his dad. He's old enough, right?
They dyed his hair.
But yeah, he's in full old man mode, and he's like, again, instantly likable. It's another one of my characters I instantly took a shine to. This priest that refused to let his heart grow dark by, you know, being sent over here, and he's still about the souls, and he's ministering to these, giving these men their last rites in prison.
Mm-hmm.
My question is, like, is he a prisoner himself, or is he just would the Portuguese see this man killed, or is he just permanently in prison to give these men their last rites as a very cynical ploy to sideline him and also cover their spiritual asses?
I assume he's also going to be killed, but he's just serving this role as long as he's alive, I suppose.
It might be useful to keep him alive because, like, you know, if you're killing men and sending them to hell, like, that's like, because that's the thing about the extra layer of crazy about all the spiritual stuff is that, you know, these people can have clean hands because ultimately, as long as they're giving these men their last rites, that they'll be in paradise and they'll be embraced in the bosom of Abraham. They're not really doing anything bad. You know, this earth stuff is all just temporary.
It gives the executed a reason to go along with it, not try to
If you
fight,
murder the man who's giving them your last rites, and now you're going into the gates of hell or purgatory at best. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, why would you take your fate so easily? So I think there's a little bit of prison intrigue here, to be honest.
Yeah, maybe they're keeping him alive. I really love that it says speaking Portuguese in the subtitles when we first meet this guy. But what he's doing is he's giving them the sign of the cross, which is Latin. I don't know why they put speaking Portuguese there, because he's most certainly not.
Because there's a lot of, I gather a lot of people didn't realize that, like, when you hear English in the show, you're supposed to understand that they're speaking Portuguese. That is like the universal translated language. But, like, even though Blackthorn is an Englishman, he's not speaking English. He's speaking, all English is Portuguese.
Yes. Except Latin is not Portuguese, and Latin is what he's speaking here. So, whatever.
Is it? Because I wouldn't know Latin from Portuguese, to be honest.
Well, I mean, it's the sign of the cross, right? It's like the thing that they say in church all the time in the name of the Father, the Son,
like
the Holy Spirit.
In nomine Dios,
nomine
Padre,
et Filii,
Sancto Spiritus. Yeah,
we didn't do that in our religion, so we don't know it very well. But that's totally.
But if you put a gun to my head and said, "What's that in Portuguese?" It might be very close to that. So
it
like,
would be,
I just wasn't sure.
Very close.
Yeah, they're all, you know, those Latin languages.
I don't know. the first thing I thought when I saw this guy is, who is this guy? He looks very familiar, but he also looks like the disguise that Cary Elwes wears in Robin Hood Men in Tights when he goes to the archery contest.
Yeah.
He's like looking a little bit worse for wear there. And I was quite confused by a lot of the stuff he was saying throughout the episode, but we'll get to some of that.
All right.
He describes here all of the different regents, gives them names and kind of runs down who they are and why they're regents, why they're important. There's this Sugiyama guy who's descended from the richest family, samurai family in Japan. There's Ono, who's a feared warrior, but his affliction of leprosy led him into the arms of the church. And then Kiyama, a man whose faith in Christ is guided only by his greed and ambition. And Ishido, who we know who lives in the castle full time.
Sugiyama seems like the least developed. He's just a rich dude.
Yeah.
Then you got the two Christian guys, one of which is obviously, you know, stands out because his face is all fucked up from leprosy.
Oh, yeah.
Like I said, Ishido, I'm kind of taking a shine to, too. He's a likable villain. He's not an idiot. I just love it when you have villains that are not complete fools.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really helps. But it helps because they can't believably just be steamrolled by the good guys.
Yeah, yeah.
So Ishido is dressed and begins the day's work, putting his seal of approval on various documents while eyeing the armor in the corner. And he meets with the other regents to vote on Torunaga's demise. However, they demand to first have Blackthorn executed.
I really like this frustration that Ishido shows, that he's on the moment of triumph. And he's already like, I like how they showed that he, you know, he sees that he's got this proud warrior tradition. There's his armor that's been sitting, you know, gathering dust. And he sits down to a long day just stamping documents. And he's like, I saw myself the way Torunaga sees us as these like powerless bureaucrats. And these men who's, it's partially their faith. I think Ono, it's definitely more of his faith. The other guy, Kiyama, it's more like, you know, the fact that his bread's being buttered by Jesus. Mm-hmm. But he's just this frustration of like, God damn it, guys, if we could put aside all these petty differences. But then again, if they could do that, they wouldn't be in the position they're in. So
sure.
I like it.
It's pretty good. And then we go back to the cells. I didn't know this guy's name. I don't know that they ever tell you. You said Father Domingo?
Yeah. I can't remember if I got that from IMDb or if I was able to look it up, because he says when he's introducing himself, he's Father Domingo. Father Domingo. Father Sunday.
I missed it. So he tells Blackthorn the entire sordid history of Catholic trade in Japan, including a gun smuggling operation out of Macau, which rings a bell in Blackthorn's head. He's heard of a guy tell stories about this place. So this is another scene that was hard for me to decipher, but I think I eventually got it. And this is kind of what we were talking about at the beginning, where the church sort of incited a rebellion. Perhaps in Japan, perhaps in Korea. It's not clear exactly to me.
I think it's both. There's a two-pronged attack.
Distract or repel the Taiko from accomplishing his mission there.
Yeah.
So he didn't shut down the profitable trade, because he was working to push the Catholics out of Japan and shut down this exploitative trade, this usury sort of thing that they had going.
And if he was able to conquer Korea and then make a significant foothold, that like his wealth and power and esteem would have made it to where they couldn't have stopped that. And turns out their whole goal is to weaken these rulers to where they can easily take them over and put someone like, I keep forgetting this guy's name, Akiyama. Like, that's their perfect guy to have on the throne. Someone who is weak and easy to turn and control. And someone like Torunaga, who is too shrewd and smart and honorable, that they're like, that's an anathema to them.
Yeah, absolutely. Seems like he's a jaded Catholic, but jaded with maybe the wrong form of Catholicism, the greedy, self-interested form.
Like, he came here, like he says, in 72. I think this takes place right at 1600 or maybe 1604. So roughly 30 years ago. was just nothing but faith in Jesus and wanting to save souls. And he sees that it's not about that. It's only about the money, all about power. And that's probably why he's in prison.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's also, you're supposed to understand this is the older version of Father Martin.
Okay. Yeah, I could see it.
That maybe it's you're not sure which way he's going to go, but like this is one of the futures that he could have, or he's just disgusted at what his country and his religion is doing.
Yeah, there's going to be this Ferreira guy in the next scene that's going to kind of demonstrate a little bit Martin's sort of unease, at least with the nature of business and Catholicism, the entanglements there. But this scene also, Torinaga gets a little bit of light here, where they talk about him being born Minowara, which they're holy men. They have a divine mandate, and that mandate is to rule as the highest rank, the highest title, I guess, that a mortal can achieve, which is shogun.
Which is a distinction from the emperor, who is literally considered a god. So he is divine, immortal, blah, blah, blah. Shogun is the highest you can be if you're outside that bloodline.
Mm-hmm.
And in practice, again, through many parts of the medieval Japan, the shogun actually was more powerful and the emperor was just a figurehead, like the king and queen in England today.
Right. Yep.
We'll be right back with more Bald Move after this brief pause.
We try to make it super easy to support making podcasts at Bald Move. Just join the club.
But some people aren't the joining type, or maybe they're already in the club but want to add a little bit of gratuity for an especially great season of coverage, or for a podcast that really spoke to them or gave them that bit of support in a tough time.
For these, and for whatever other reason you might have, our tip jar is always open. Head over to support.baldmove.com and click the donate option to say, hey, keep doing what you're doing. We appreciate it.
Once again, check out support.baldmove.com for all the great ways to help me and Jim keep making the podcast you love.
And now, back with more Bald Move.
So yeah, let's go over to the captain of the black ship asking Martin. I think this guy's name is Ferreira, is what the subtitles say. Asking Martin to get Torinaga's approval for his ship to depart. And he says, we're working on it.
This is the one thing I was confused on. This has to be a gross simplification. There can't be a single ship that once a year makes the trip. Like, maybe there's one ship a month, but they make it like this is the ship. Like, if this ship gets delayed, it won't be able to make its shipment for next year. Like, I don't care how big this ship is. There's no way it can take all the silk trade.
Yeah, this could be Noah's freaking ark, and it's not going to hold enough. And the way that they describe the sort of pack that they were running in, even as pirates, as privateers, right? Mm-hmm. With the as Mora, whatever it was called, Blackthorn's group of ships. It was a group of five ships.
Yeah,
it wasn't a singular ship. They were down to one ship.
Maybe it's one ship per port. Like a region, like this is the Osaka ship.
Oh, this is the black ship that shows up in our port.
Yeah, and like Edo has one, and or Edo has one, and the other places. But like, I without knowing more, this seemed like wow, one ship is the.
Yeah,
but it's also a good way if you would just want to simplify a story. It's like you just make it all or nothing, you know.
Yeah, I suppose so.
Simplifies a lot of much more boring bureaucracy of shutting down multiple ships, and you know, it's like, who cares, you know, just tell the most exciting version of it. One ship.
So then Martin warns Mariko that he has read Blackthorn's journals and he is a worse man than she thinks.
Also, he knows about her dark thoughts. I wonder what that means. Is that telling
He's
us
probably
something?
Confessed to her, yeah.
Well, yeah, but I wonder, like, is that telling something? Is that something that they're telling us, the audience, to make sure that we weren't left behind, or is that something that he's trying to work? Like, if he's helped her resolve her suicidal ideation before, is it something he could not do if she's going to be a problem going forward? Is it something he could like whisper the right words into her ear to get her to be suicidal, or I wasn't sure because like they'd already kind of told us about her problems this first episode, but
yeah, that's the thing.
Sometimes you got to do that more than once to make sure the audience follows or doesn't go off on wild goose chases.
I mean, the new information here is that she's discussed it with Martine. And I don't know if they're using that to do anything more currently or if they will in the future, but
is she disgusted with him?
No, she has discussed her, those feelings. She's not disgusted with him. She has discussed this with disgusted.
Oh, got you. Yeah.
I also like that he calls her Lady Maria, which I suppose Mariko translates nicely to Mary, Maria, whatever. Now, that's her Christian name, apparently.
I thought he was just making a comment about her faith in the Virgin Mary.
I don't think so. I think he calls her
that. You could be right. I could see them, like, that's a form of colonialism, right? Renaming someone.
Mm-hmm.
That's close enough.
Yeah. So Ishido visits Yabushige to ask what Torinaga sees in this pirate, Blackthorn. Yabushige guesses that it might be his hatred of the Portuguese that makes him useful, especially if the Christian regents decided to make a move. Of course, it doesn't matter because Ishido has already approved Blackthorn's execution, unless, of course, Yabushige can do something to stop it. Here's where I start to think why. Here's where I lose the actual vision of what the machinations are.
And I think that's good. Like, as but there's a couple of theories, right?
Okay. I'd be interested to hear your theories because I don't have any good ones myself. I've been racking my brain. Why would they want to save this man from death and put him in Torinaga's possession again? There has to be some other layer that they've considered that I have not.
Okay. So the first part is like, why would they want to keep him from being killed? I think it's clear that to me that Ishido does not know why. He doesn't understand why Torinaga is intrigued by this barbarian, but he knows that Torinaga is smart enough that he's probably got a good reason, and he doesn't want this man to die without knowing that. And he certainly doesn't want Torinaga and these guys both to die before
God, that's a risky move. Like,
it is a really risky move.
This pawn,
but here's the
thing. I'm going to give it back so I can figure out why he needs this pawn.
No. What I'm unclear on is if the plan was for Yabushige to kidnap him and deliver him to Ishido, or if Ishido says, give you back the throne so we can find out what he knows. Because, like, it's only risky if you think that the plot was to get him back to Torinaga.
So I assumed, but maybe I shouldn't assume that.
But it could be that Yabushige is playing both sides.
I mean, it's absolutely possible. If there's one guy playing both sides, it's this guy.
Yeah. So it could be that he suggested, like, let me get in I'll be your man. I'll be your spy inside the court. And what he knows, and then when the time is right, we'll kill them both at the same time. And then we'll know. And then in reward for my behavior, I won't be killed as part of this guy's war band.
Right. This is the thing that I love about this scene is how he's pitching him on becoming his vassal, right? You might need this pawn and you might need a vassal to control him, and I'm on the chopping block unless I turn traitor here. So this is my only real play and I'm gonna take it.
And also, am I really a traitor or am I just going back home? Because you've been my boy since the Korean War, and you know, we fought the same blood, shed the same blood. Like, am I even really a traitor?
He's feeling out here whether he'll be rewarded for treachery. And that's such a slippery slope, right? It's like,
it is.
You're going to reward somebody for stabbing somebody else in the back.
Well, especially when you see Yabu, he does that in a microcosm in the next scene. Like, he pays these brigands to save Blackthorn from execution and then immediately executes them because they're a loose end. So, like,
right.
Why would he think that Ishido would honor his word? Like, as soon as he does the thing, why wouldn't he just be killed along with So it's like, right, I think this is all intentional. Like, these are wheels within wheels. And honestly...
But if it's your only play,
yeah,
it buys you time.
He's climbing the ladder of chaos.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, it gets you to the next rung. And whether the next rung is the one that's broken and you fall to your death...
But if you stay at this rung, you're going to die. So you gotta make your, Or it's the, like Amos talked about in The Expanse, is the churn.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's just this upheaval and he's just trying, like the ground shifting beneath his feet and he's trying to find where one secure foothold so he can spring to the next one.
Yeah. It's super interesting, the contrast of him versus Torunaga, because Torunaga feels like he's making new ground. He's the one shaking the world.
He's making
causing the ground
to
fall from underneath everyone else, and he's stepping across the stones that still stand, right?
Yes. Why he's
Don jumping Corleone. Desperately.
He's Don Corleone, and this other guy is Barzini. He just he's not quite. He's very smart, and he can follow well, but he's not able to lead.
Absolutely.
And I like I said, I'm 50-50 on whether this Yuba guy is true blue or not. Like I'm maybe 51% thinking he will be loyal because he's so coded as a two-faced traitor that like surely they're not going to have him be the one that's the turncoat. And also he's extremely likable. That's a very rare quality to give just the worst kind of turncoat in fiction. So
yeah, absolutely.
We'll see.
I do question how having a military or how having a pirate who hates Portuguese will help when the Christian regents make their move, but I guess they're hoping maybe to get the support of England.
Yeah, or just
the Portuguese.
I think it's just mostly I don't think he understands the opportunity to Blackthorn gives him, but he's smart enough to be wary of an opportunity that Tokunaga sees. So it's like I said, it's like I don't think he understands it himself. He's just like, boy, killing both these guys without, you know, because like, hey, Ishido could benefit from this. He's not a Christian. Like, if he found out that there's other flags he could parlay with, get a better deal, it's just better for him. He'll get more and more powerful. And I think he wants to be unironically the Shogun. So it tracks. It tracks.
The big question to me is why put him in Torunaga's custody? That's the thing that I'm like, like, that's really risky if all you're looking for is to figure out what his plan is.
100%. But again, I don't know Yabu's heart, and I don't know exactly which side, and I don't know what Ishido knows about him either, other than there used to be war buddies, which I didn't know until this episode.
All right, let's go to Blackthorn. He's grabbed out of his cage, led through the woods. We kind of talked about this. The group that has him in custody is killed by bandits whom Yabushige hired to steal Blackthorn. And Yabushige also kills the bandits so he can cover his tracks.
Do you know the old man had blue eyes?
Which old man?
The one that was the distraction that like kind of like is the inciting, this old beggar is kind of, I wonder, just since we watched the Blue-Eyed Samurai, are they implying that he's kind of, this is offensive, I understand, but like a half-breed?
Yeah, a monster, a demon, whatever
monster,
they call them.
Yeah. Is that one of the reasons they use this guy to... He didn't get killed by Yaba either.
I was reading this as a blind beggar, but maybe it was blue eyes. Apparently, I don't look at people's eyes. I didn't notice the terrible contacts.
You thought his eyes were just kind of roomy.
I thought they were milky.
Okay.
And, yeah.
Okay. All right. You might be right. But also, I think John's eyes, now that I see them, look a little roomy. Look a little like he got bit by a zombie 6 hours ago and he's about to turn.
Oh, God. But yeah, I mean, it could be. There's certainly that around that time.
But just the multiple levels of treachery here in 30 seconds. Like, I've the record number of literal backstabs in a 60 second period I've ever seen in fiction.
Yep. So here's the other thing that I found interesting about this scene. Yabushige has called John Blackthorn brash and simple in the past. And I think that he is kind of being oblivious in this scene. When he hears him say thank you in Japanese, he says, oh, you can learn or whatever. It surprises him. But he doesn't take that to heart. He then uses that to make him call himself a dog, and it's all funny, ha ha, for him. But he doesn't realize that, oh, actually, this isn't a very simple man. This is a man who I actually need to consider as formidable.
Right, because the other thing about Blackthorne's story is that he is multiple link. He doesn't just know English and Spanish. He also knows Dutch because he was conversing with the Dutch crew.
Right.
I think that was even subtitled. He was speaking Dutch. So, like, he is the danger here is, like, other people have taught him words like teke and, like, other these, but, like, he's picked up this on his own, just in context. Mm-hmm. So, like, this is a guy who knows, like, four or five languages, who's already starting to take apart your Lego set and put it back together. And
who presented a challenge to you in a previous encounter. And yeah. Why he doesn't take him more seriously at this point is kind of bewildering to me.
And I also think there's another slight showing of the storytelling's hand is that when he says, oh, you're a good boy, all you want is a good master. That's exactly what he portrayed to Ishidu, that like all you need is this man and a vassal who to control him, putting him as like, I think he's saying, I'm the good master that's going to be. You're going to be the loyal dog too. So I think now you could say that like, oh, he's actually talking about Torunaga, but like, I think in context, he's seeing himself as like, ah, you are the dog that I'm going to rise to power on.
Seems like it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But again, he's the guy maximum suspect of treachery, which makes me automatically not suspect him.
Mm-hmm. I found it hilarious that, Father Domingo was like, when they come in to snatch Blackthorne out to execute him, he's like, oh, quickly confess to me your sins, confess all, and you'll be forgiven. Yeah. You can enter heaven. And it's like, man, there's not enough time left in this series to confess all of his sins, let alone in this moment.
And also, the exception, Blackthorne is like, kind of like a skeptic, a little bit of you know, it's like a god I don't quite believe in, you know, kind of a deal.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that was another of him, like, you know, you keep your faith in your god. He does not keep my faith in mine. I think he's putting his faith in himself.
Yeah, I agree.
Which I gotta say, kind of misplaced. There's gonna be a lot of luck involved here in him surviving.
Oh yeah,
because like you ever think about it? Like if he had a shipwrecked a year ago, he'd just been off with his head right away. If the Taiko was still alive.
Yeah. Yeah, probably.
So just, and I think the Spaniard made that a good point about like, you know, you say you eschewed his philosophy, but didn't you just float to the shore? Like what was your, what was your active hand in your survival there? So it's a little, I think any kind of quote unquote great man, great woman, whatever, has to have a little bit of rationality to pull off.
And a hell of a lot of luck.
Yeah. Yeah. Like Alexander the Great is just Alexander if he doesn't wake up one day and be like, you know what? I can conquer the world. Who fucking thinks that?
Who fucking thinks
that? Yeah. Like if you even have a, you can't be that person if you have even a sliver of doubt.
Mm-hmm. All right. Blackthorne. Sorry. No. Yeah. Yamashige brings Blackthorne to Torunaga, claiming that he saved him from bandits. And this time, Mariko is the one interpreting. Torunaga asks about English customs and what Blackthorne knows about the world. Blackthorne tells him about everything. Macau, the gun running, the Portuguese and Spanish have split up the new world and have legal authority to lay claim to any part of their territory and turn it Catholic. This is all huge revelations for Torunaga.
And this shows the smarts of Blackthorne, because he has now known a god a little bit of intelligence, and he knows exactly how to serve it up and not like, you know, it's kind of like in way of passing. Oh, yeah, we had to divert around this giant base in Macau because it's just teeming with these Japanese. I think they're called Ronin. Like he knows exactly the red meat to, and Torunaga doesn't understand that he's been primed by the priest to kind of like, so he's taking this in as it's like, you know, just off the cuff, unvarnished intelligence. And it's just really great to see how the tables have slightly turned and Blackthorne's got a little bit of information and how well he's using it.
Yeah. And how he's accumulated those scraps. Like even in that first episode, the very first encounter with the Portuguese, he susses out, oh, you didn't actually even tell them that someone other than Portuguese exists over in the old world. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, he's collecting these little tidbits and serving them up, like you said. very, very tastily.
And that, again, the dialogue's so good with, you know, the Lord says you should abandon war because you're outnumbered. It's hopeless. Which is exactly the situation Tokunaga is in as well, or Tokunaga. I've been saying Toranaga, haven't I? Notes are wrong. Toranaga. And he's like, when he deadpans back, well, unless I win. And you can see that slow smile spread because he's
so
like,
stupid.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's right.
It's a man who believes in manifest. That's a thing someone who believes in manifest destiny says, right? Like, oh, yeah, of course it's hopeless and pointless and I shouldn't try unless I win.
But maybe Toranaga does too because of the Minowaran blood. And
sure.
Like, there's like this a little bit of like, he knows that he's a hopeless, but he also is still playing the game because he secretly thinks he can win. There's
I mean,
a little
everything
bit of
is
simpatico.
Hopeless unless you succeed. Even things that are 99% certain are hopeless unless you succeed.
I know,
almost
but the,
a truism, but it's like
the comedy
it says
is
so
that,
much
like,
about him.
Yes, yeah, that Toranaga is right there with him. Like, yeah, uh-huh. Yeah, brother, you and me against the world.
Yep. All right, Blackthorn asks about Toranaga's armor, which was made after he saw it in a dream. He warns Mariko that Toranaga is in danger, and she advises him not to speak out of turn. I have a feeling that once we finally see him in action, Toranaga is going to be a badass.
He's got magic dream armor. He's got magic blood.
Uh-huh. He's even more than Hiramatsu.
And he snicker-snacked his ninja woman like it was nothing.
Oh, yeah. That was cool.
With his Vorpal blade, yeah. I have a feeling that like when him and the Iron Hand pop off, it's going to be something.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and also there's this barbarian joke about you need a bath. It's like, I ran out of bath. He's like, in the prison? No, back at the village. It's like, he's...
A week ago, 2 baths in a week? What am I?
Yeah, do you want me to get the flux? The bloody flux?
What is the flux? Like, I have no idea what the flux is.
I think
is.
It's the polite way of saying shitting your brains out.
Okay.
Diarrhea.
Yeah. Yeah. Nobunaga's revenge, sure.
Yeah, all that shit that they poured on you a couple episodes back. It's finally caught up to you.
So Martin petitions Toranaga to allow the black ship to leave port. He denies the request for now, deciding that he wants to see this secret Portuguese base. Boy, just laying all the cards out, huh? He not only knows about them now, but he's requesting to see them.
I wonder if it's because like there's also this offense that that they find out that the Portuguese and Spain have essentially divided the whole world, and they consider they've thought that this was kind of an equal thing, but like to see the plot laid bare to replace you and your culture and to take over, and that they already see it as theirs, they own it.
Mm-hmm.
I think he is speaking as a man of dignity and power, and he's offended, and also the balance of power is such that like if Japan united against these out, they just don't have the numbers, you know, like he's outnumbered by his countrymen, but if he could consolidate power, he absolutely would have the mandate and ability to drive these men out and maybe get the Christians on his side because he could hoist them on their own petard here, religiously
potentially
speaking.
the ones who actually believe in the tenets of Christianity.
Yeah, and then, like the fact that like that line about there's so much I don't know and so much this barbarian does, I'm gonna have to you know, I'm the director of the foreign affairs, and I'm going to dot my I's and cross my T's. And if the black ship is delayed, the black ship's delayed. It's
pitching it as curiosity, I think, is interesting, right? Not like righteous indignation that you people are carving up my land.
But it isn't, Nicky, because he isn't all Tywin Lannister, because Tywin Lannister wouldn't have showed his hand like this.
Right, right.
But this is the Ned Stark coming out, where he's just like, I am in power and righteously so, and you guys are pipsqueaks and morally insignificant, and I'm going to tell you about it.
Mm-hmm. So Martin goes back to his people and reports Toranaga's decision. Regent Kiyama says he'll deal with the problem, so he sends an assassin after Blackthorn, and Toranaga kills her.
Yeah, but she kills a lot. I wonder if she kills anyone important. I couldn't tell. Like, did she kill...
One of
those women might have been the Iron Fist's wife. But they also could have...
Oh, really?
I don't know, because they're all... It's very dark.
Yeah.
And they're all dressed like all of... I do like this. Everyone's color-coded, you know? Like, all of... Toranaga's men are in that kind of like neutral brown tone, and all of Yoshida's men are in that gray tone. So like it's very easy to tell, but also it makes them in the dark all kind of like, you know, when they're running and fleeing and screaming, they're kind of all like all look the same. That seemed very racist. All these Japanese people look the same to me when they're wearing identical clothes in the dark. Yeah. But I thought it was a badass scene because this woman is just going around gutting people, like killing the men. Yeah. Just like playing the stealth angle perfectly. And the fact that Toranaga had set this up to where he gave the barbarian his, you know, like the place of honor, his, but he was doing it just to kind of see.
I didn't pick up on that. That's interesting.
I think so.
They kind of set up two identical situations, one with just some dude and then one with Toranaga, where they're kind of at the precipice of a doorway. Mm-hmm. And the assassin's waiting, lurking behind, and she murders this other guy because he's got his sword halfway through the door. He's telegraphing his position, and she murders him. But Toranaga does that exact same thing, except completely destroys her, surprises the shit out of her.
Yeah, it just takes one of her jugulars out. And I thought he would maybe interrogate her before he dies. But the other thing I got here is that Toranaga, I think, thinks he got enough from Blackthorn that where, like, if he died, he wouldn't even care because he's already got enough to like put the screws to the other guys. And if like this guy gets killed and he could probably use that to his favor. And where if he lives, then he can find out that, oh, this guy's even more important than I thought. And I might need, you know, he might be further. Again, I'm really impressed by the way they're doing the intrigue and the politics, because again, I think they're playing with all their hands face up and I'm still not 100% sure what's going on. That's where I want to be. I wonder
if this also isn't a sort of battle testing from Toranaga too, because you notice he doesn't step in when Blackthorn goes up to the assassin right away. He lets him kind of fend her off a little bit.
Yep.
And then he steps in when she's about to murder him.
Shows his personal valor and his him trying to save Toranaga.
And maybe gets a taste of what they might be up against with the white men, right? Like, sure, you can't judge all of them by Blackthorn and his capabilities or lack thereof, but maybe gets a taste of like, okay, how good are these people hand to hand?
Yeah. And also that's something that came up with Yabu too, that he's surprised at the strength of this, you know, particular European. And that wasn't even Blackthorn. Right. That was just one of his crew. It's like, maybe they got a certain opinion of the Spanish and the Portuguese from the priests and the merchants, but now they're dealing with, you know, maybe the warrior class for the first time.
Yeah. So I don't know if that's there, but I was seeing that. But that's it. That's the end of the episode.
Yeah, we got to run because it's about time for us to see the movie Dune Part 2. But we'll be back next week to get further into the world of Shogun. If you have feedback, please send it to us, shogun@baldmove.com. Please do not send us spoilers, or you understand that there's a whole novel. There's a whole miniseries that probably a lot of people have seen and read, and also based on a lot of fictionalized historical accounts. We're just trying to go with the flow, man. Trying to see where life takes us in this crazy Shogun game. But if you have anything that you think would be helpful to explain, like the backstory, the background, that's not going to be explained to us, or some of the cultural things, or if you just got your opinions as a show watcher, we'd love to hear it. shogun@baldmove.com. And we could also use your support, support.baldmove.com. It's not just altruism. You give us some money, you also get ad-free feeds and bonus audio and video content. Like our review of Dune, we give a spoiler-free version to everybody, but then we get really spoilery just for the club members. Join up today at support.baldmove.com. Until next week, this is where we leave you. Can't wait to see you back next week. And until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
See ya.